Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Tuesday night installment here at Your Remedies in the Law. Tonight, of course, we're discussing various IRS administrative remedies with our speaker, Mr. Tony Davis. My name is Martin Michaels. I'll be your host for this evening's conference brought to you by Your Remedies in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer.
Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you are on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very bluntly ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone joining this call looking for legal advice has no place or business here. Nobody here at Your Remedies in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. It's just folks saying what they might do where they're similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However educated and experienced these thoughts and opinions might be, they are just people's opinions nonetheless. And it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. I'd like to go over a few things here with Your Remedies in the Law, if I could, very quickly. First of all, if I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremediesinthelaw.com. If we look up in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are of much importance, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure. Better known to some as American jurisprudence or ANJUR, the rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its high national win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that is not really why it's on this page. The reason that we have it up here with the jurisdictionary course is when you go through it, you'll notice that it utilizes a lot of the same fundamental procedures that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course. So it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's their first time committing to action. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because of such a high success rate and traffic scenarios being such a common interest in this country today. The common law default, although known majorly for traffic purposes, has many other. Truly, it's for most scenarios that you may find yourself in where there's no damage to property or person. It's just some entity is claiming you broke a rule, therefore you must pay a civil penalty. Although these items are very affordably priced, the jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default at $150. Also on the subject of Your Remedies in the Law, most of you are probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of yourremediesinthelaw.com, you are met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to the site that you were visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. So there are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects, as well as many other features and study groups at Your Remedies in the Law. And Your Remedies in the Law is just one of a couple dozen websites that all together make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, get a hold of us at yourremediesinthelaw.com, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can. Statewide communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict pre-decided topics of discussion. Essentially, how it works is this. A wizard will walk you through a very easy setup. You know, put your name in here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then it will walk you through the remainder of the setup. And then you get to a point where it will ask you what are your hot points interested in. This could range anything from credit card issues, home foreclosure, IRS matters, asset protection, or maybe veterans' rights, maybe personal health rights, anything that you can think of. And if it affects your personal rights, you should find it in that list or something that's close enough. When the setup is complete, it puts it all together, much of what you think of a social network. Though nothing like a social network. It's very custom, it's very private. But it then puts you in contact with people in your local area that have similar interests to you. The idea here is to put the power of education and communication back in the hands of the common man. If you are in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a private place that you could go to discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions, with people that were like-minded, maybe you come online one day and you say, this happened to me today. First person comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think that they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that's probably not going to be of a tremendous amount of help to you. Maybe the next person comes on and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do were I similarly situated. I'd watch these YouTube videos, and then I'd go down there to my local county courthouse, go to the law library, get a law dictionary, and look up these terms. Maybe the next person after that says, those all sound like great ideas. I'd also go to this particular website and check out these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then for you to go and do some due diligence on what you're reading, just people's suggestions, people's opinions at all. But if you did some due diligence and educated yourself, maybe the farther you got into it, you discovered that it's not as difficult as you initially thought it would be because you're focused on one single subject. And you get to the point where you've educated yourself, and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to do here at Statewide Communications is just very simply get people to start talking again. Of course, there's no cost to you for using Statewide Communications, either signing up or the regular using of it. And so we hope that you'll pass that around. Freedoms Radio. If you're over the road, you don't want to deal with the call process, maybe you're just new to your remedies in the law and you don't yet have your username and password, therefore you can't see the phone number and the PIN. By the way, if you'd like to pick up a membership to your remedies in the law, it's very easy. You just simply click the register button. Fill out your basic information there. You'll enjoy the first 30 days for free to evaluate it. After that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your credit card or your PayPal. But every single call is recorded. You have years of archives to go through, a vast wealth of knowledge, as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night, the calls go out over the air at 9 p.m. Eastern live. There's also the question bar there where you can type in a question, click submit. As long as that's during call hours, that will pop up on the moderator screen, and we do our best to read every single one of those questions out over the air as long as they are appropriate. So you don't get the one-on-one with the information provider like you would be by being a private member, but you do get your questions answered. There's no cost to utilize Freedoms Radio, so no matter where you are or your circumstances, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, winding down here, I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. For any purchase that you may make at your remedies in the law or any of the other sites underneath the umbrella of Americans Restoring America, when you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you are doing just that. Information providers pay Mr. Edward for advertising at your remedies in the law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expenses that they might have associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we simply do is listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that honestly most of you would probably never be able to find on your own just simply because they can't be found. Can we make those introductions? Not every part on the information provider is always going to be successful. Everybody always hopes for the best. We plan for the best, and believe you me, we aim for the best. But unavoidable things do sometimes happen, and when they do, you have to roll with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in life. But we also want to emphasize, though, that the intent is always to be successful. If you have any questions of that, we welcome you to visit www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com/testimonials and see what others have to say about these products and services. Now, let's touch very quickly on the subject of refunds or the refund policy. There is none. Not if the remedy is in the law, anyway. Of course, when you come aboard and you go with a particular information provider, again, that is exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or a credit would be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider, and even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. All right, lastly, pertaining here to all of the information providers at Your Remedies in the Law, we'd like you to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conferences are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if a question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we can all learn something from it.
Well, thank you so very much, Martin. I appreciate that. Ladies and gentlemen, this evening's call is not going to happen with John. John had to go to the hospital yesterday with food poisoning, actually the day before yesterday. He went back in yesterday, and he went back in this morning. Seems like he had a 105-point-something temperature, and it's been difficult for him to deal with these things. So he will not be on the call tonight. So I thought instead of we've got everyone on this call here is regulars. There's no first-time callers. So I thought I would go ahead and just open it up for Q&A, and just we'll have an open call, open talk, open call. So why don't you press star 2 and say hello? That'll be a good start. While you're thinking about pressing star 2, I'll get over here on Freedom's Radio to see if there's anyone there to talk to about this at the moment. Give me 1 second. Hi, got some people over there too. Anyways, press star 2 and we'll just talk. Have some questions. Sam, Ron, Brian, Jennifer. Hey, Miss Jennifer. Thank you. Appreciate you not leaving me hanging here. What's up? What's on your mind?
You talking to me?
Yes.
You talking to me? Eh?
I thought you
were... De Niro, huh? Or whatever.
I thought you were listing off names of people. Well, I'm just wondering if there's anyone else who has a passport card because they're an American national, and whether they... what they're doing about their 1040 income tax, or if they've done anything this year or other years. That's all. I'm just wondering what other people have done to whether they pay them or don't pay them or what.
All right. Sam raised his hand. Let's see what's going on here. Sam, go ahead, Sam.
Well, I'm not corrected yet. I'm filing exempt on my W-4 with no recourse or without recourse without prejudice, UCC 1-308. I don't know exactly what that does with the debt that I'm accruing. And once I get my status corrected, I don't remember the process, but I do believe that there is a way where I'm not liable for that debt. So...
all right.
That's
Sam,
what I'm doing.
Comments. I've got some comments for what you just said. The first thing is I would never use their code simply because their code is for their people. What I would do is I would write something to the effect of all rights reserved, no rights waived, and also the word non-assumpsit. If you were on the call last week with John, you'll remember him talking about non-assumpsit. That's the first thing that comes to mind.
Okay.
Something
I'll
else.
That.
Yeah. As soon as you can afford to get into the program, I would be including my status affidavit, my affidavit of citizenship, with anything that I file with the government. And
okay.
If there's a place to write anything down, I might just write down right now, assert that I'm an American national under Title 8, Section 1502. Their assertion that you're not is something that upon challenge they have to evidence that you are not an American national. That's some things that cross my mind. Anybody else? Press star 2 on your keypad. You're still open, Jennifer.
Okay. So would I be sending a 1040 blank form in with just my affidavit and then non-assumpsit, all rights reserved, all rights, no rights waived, like instead of my signature at the bottom or with my signature at the bottom or on the actual 1040, like, I'm not sure.
If I remember, there is a rule or a law that they have that you can send a letter in lieu of a 1040. So I would do a search on your search engines. May I write a letter in lieu of a 1040 just to see what you pull up?
Right.
And now this is all I'm saying, all of this without the benefit of John being here to direct or lead. So anything that I say, don't do. You know, until you talk to John or get an email to him or however. But I would look up that first, about a letter in lieu of. In fact, let me just do that while I'm here on the computer just to see what I can find real quick in seconds. Letter in lieu L-I-E-U, there you go, of a 1040, not 1050, 1040. See what that says. Do's and don'ts, taxpayers, for getting a letter of notice from understanding your IRS notice or letter, how to show proof of income, frequently asked questions on estates. That doesn't say anything. Nothing comes up first on that. Got a letter of notice.
Well, while I think of another question, and I don't lose it in my brain, is it the same? Does the American National also exempt you from the state tax, or do I need to do a state tax return?
No, it's the same thing.
The
state tax is a tax levied by a territory of the United States. They have no more right to tax you than the federal government has a right to tax you. So what I would do, were I similarly situated without the benefit of reaching out for help, is I would write a letter, dear IRS, I don't know if this is proper form. However, I am writing this letter to you in lieu of filing a 1040 form this year. The reason that I am writing this letter is to inform you that I have corrected my political citizenship status from a United States, and then I put in brackets, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17. End bracket, citizen, to that of a American national, as described in Article 8, Section 1502. Having said this, it is my understanding I do not have a duty to file, keep records, or pay taxes to the federal government. Please reply with your evidence that I am incorrect.
Okay.
Yours truly, blah, 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 something like that. That's what I would do.
All righty. I'll get that set up, and then I can send it to John, so when he's ready, he can approve or not approve.
Yeah, there you go. Anybody else?
Thanks.
Let's keep this conversation going, because I'm having to hold this up on my own, and I wasn't prepared. Can I tell you? So let's talk about correcting your status. That is the single most critical thing there is that you can do in your life. More than anything else is to be recognized as an American national. And the reason for that is because the American national is who we all were immediately following the war, the in War of Independence. That's who we all were. And then 8 years later, the Articles of Confederation were amended, renamed a constitution for the United States of America. And out of that, our founding fathers created this little bitty helper tool called the United States under Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17. Therein, that little seed of a monster outgrew its pants. Come the Civil War, successfully flipped the paradigm completely upside down, and did so without anyone really catching on to it. As far as the general public was concerned, we know that the lawyers knew exactly what was going on, because you know, even as close as 1901, you had the the Supreme Court of the United States. They came back and gave us that. What was it? Here it is. This is Justice John Marshall Harlan said, "The idea prevails with some, indeed, its found expression of the arguments of the bar that we have in this country substantially two national governments." So Justice Harlan was telling us right there. And then you can even go back in time a little bit. Cruikshank, was it? Let's see if I can find it real quick. Get confused sometimes. Yeah, in Chisholm versus Georgia. Wow, I love this. This is so incredible. To the Constitution of the United States, the term sovereign is totally unknown. There's but one place where it could have been used with propriety, but even in that place, it would not have, perhaps, have comported with the delicacy of those who ordained and established the Constitution. They might have announced themselves sovereign people of the United States, but serenely conscious of the fact they avoided this ostentatious declaration. And here's a wonderful quote. "As the state has proclaimed precedence of the people, so in the same inverted course of things, the government has often claimed precedence of the state. And to this perversion in the second degree, many of the volumes of confusion concerning sovereignty owe their existence." And sovereignty was defined, and those who are sovereign were identified by this case. It's the Dred Scott versus John F. A. Sanford. It's 1857. This is before the Civil War. The High Court stated in relevant part, quote, "The words people of the United States and citizens are synonymous terms and mean the same thing. They both describe the political body who, according to our republican institutions, form the sovereignty and who hold the power and conduct the government through their representatives. They are what we familiarly call the sovereign people. And every citizen is one of these people and a constituent member of this sovereignty. It is true, every person and class, every class of description of persons, listen to this, who were at the time of the adoption of the Constitution recognized as citizens of the several states, but also became citizens of this new political body, but none other. It was formed by them and for them and their posterity, but for no one else. And the personal rights and privileges guaranteed to citizens of this new sovereignty were intended to embrace only those who were then members of the several state communities, or who should afterwards, by birthright or otherwise, become members according to the provisions of the Constitution and the principles upon which it was founded. So, you know, you have that is absolutely declaring the sovereignty of we the people as state citizens. Now, are we sovereign citizens? No. You can't be a sovereign and be a citizen at the same time. You can be a sovereign. That's the first definition in Black's Law, first edition through sixth edition. The name of a sovereign occupying the position analogous to other sovereigns of the nations of the world. You've got that sovereign. I would have that by birthright. My grandfather, Nathaniel, eight times a great-grandfather. He's listed in the Massachusetts militia. He fought in the War for Independence, and he also fought in the War of 1812. Listed right there. But it also says that these were state citizens. So you can be a state citizen and enjoy all of the natural rights. As a state citizen, you are an American national. And the phrase sovereign citizen is a phrase merely meant to paint an ugly picture about you and nothing else. That's all it's good for. It's like the when the IRS came up with the phrase tax objector, or what was the phrase? Tax protester is what they call people that ask questions about the tax and its application. You're a tax protester. And they've been barred now from calling people tax protesters. There's a court decision on that. So just like, you know, that's been barred, maybe we can get the phrase sovereign citizen barred. Who knows? Anybody else? Press star 2 on your keypad. Don't want to have a too short of a call tonight. Again, for those of you that just joined us in the last few moments, John will not be speaking to us. He's very badly ill and has been in the hospital day before yesterday and yesterday and again this morning. So hopefully he'll be back on his feet tomorrow. He sounded pretty good early this evening, but he just had to pass on tonight's call. So press star 2. Sam, your phone is open. Jennifer, your phone is open. Anybody else want to get on open mic tonight and chat with me? Press star 2.
Well, should I, if it comes up that I became an American citizen at some point, is it fair to say to whoever's carrying on about it that I assumed I was a number 3 definition. That's what I thought that I was becoming. I had no idea that there were 3 different types of U.S. citizens, and that certificate, according to the government, was a number 2 citizen, but I wasn't told that. And so...
Right. Yeah. Well, there's 3 definitions for United States, but there are only 2 definitions for citizenship. The first definition has nothing to do with citizenship. It has to do with sovereignty.
I see.
So the first definition is about sovereignty. The second definition is about being subject to the United States. That's where they pigeonhole you without you correcting your status. And number 3 definition is citizen of one of the several states of the Union by and under the Constitution. What I would do is I'd simply look up, go use your search engine, pull up Black's Law, 4th edition or whatever, and then look up the term United States, grab those 3 definitions, and memorize them.
Mm.
I'd memorize them. So that if you're in court, traffic court, whatever, and the judge says, are you a United States citizen, Jennifer? And my reply would be, well, Your Honor, there are 3 definitions. Which definition are you asking? Am I Jennifer Sue, the name of a sovereign occupying the position analogous to other sovereigns of the nations of the world? No, I was born in Australia. I was naturalized a United States citizen, and I corrected my status to that of being a New Yorker, a citizen of one of the several states of this union. which is the third definition, by and under the Constitution. So when you ask me, Your Honor, if I'm a United States citizen, which definition do you mean?
Because online the other day, I wanted to do something, and I had to say if I was an American citizen or not, and I decided I would say, yes, I am, because I am. I'm a definition 3 United States citizen.
Correct. Correct.
So I feel like whenever we're asked that, are you a U.S. citizen, they aren't saying which one, but I'm telling them which one I am, basically.
Sure. Right.
So that, I think we can do that, right?
Well, I would never answer yes without with stipulation of definition number 3, where are you? Ron,
well,
your mic is open. Go ahead, Jennifer. Yeah, I know. They don't give you that option.
Right. Anyway.
Ron,
I'll let someone else.
And Sam and Jennifer, feel free to come in when Ron is talking and add your 2 cents. We're just sitting around a round table here. Ron, go ahead.
Hi.
Hammett?
Hey. Yeah, well, San Diego. I had a document a while back. It was 2,500 pages long, having to do with IRS. Taxes, and what my question is there an origin of that document? Let me describe it first, because it was very clear in the beginning of the document. I tried to read it thoroughly. What happened was they said in the beginning of this document, number one, you had to be a follower of Christ. They weren't going to try to give, the information that you're putting out on the call. They weren't going to just put this in the hands of the average Joe. It was not worth their time. So this was prior to 2017, and I had an injury, so I was laid up in bed, and I opened the document. And briefing over it, 2,500 pages, wow. And so I started
reading.
That's
5 reams. 5 reams of paper.
Yeah, but it was in digital format, so it really wasn't crushing me.
So it didn't weigh so much, huh?
yeah. But the weight of what they were saying in the beginning, you know, I've been a follower of Christ since I was 30. I'm almost 60. And so that was not a tough hurdle. And I said, okay, I'm going to go in. And what they kept keying a phrase was the, as far as a citizenship or being a sovereign or this or that or the other, naturalized, they had a phrase where they said you're a resident alien. And I've seen that on paperwork in times past. And didn't know about it and didn't do my due diligence and look it up, but they said this is what you should be putting on your document. And that changed between 2017 when I started reading this laboriously long document and then got recommended over to these calls through Judge Bernie. The resident alien part as far as compared to the naturalized citizenship that you're talking about, going about getting things. How did you guys put it earlier? Correcting.
Well,
okay,
first off, 2,500 pages is laughable. I mean, it's just pathetic. Everything boils down to some very simple, either this or that type scenarios.
Correct.
You don't have to be a follower of the Messiah Yahushua, which is how I would express it. Here in the United States of America, you can be anything that you want, as long as you don't injure other people or their property.
Understandable. That was their particular. Really, they quoted a lot from Black's Law Dictionary.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah, well, you got Black Slaw, you got Bouvier's, and there's one other one, too, that you can work with. But the thing is that you're either this, that, or the other. If you go to Black's Law, you have one of three choices that you may or may not qualify for. If you qualify for the first choice, that is the name of a sovereign occupying the position of Nagos, other sovereigns in the nations of the world, then you have a ancestry.com type thing where it shows who begot whom, all the way back to the mid to latter part of the 1700s. To prove that you had the boots on the ground. And if you can better off find the name of that that grandparent, eight times removed approximately, in the Massachusetts militia or whatever state militia, you know, that you were looking at of the 13 colonies, you know, then you can claim. You can actually make a declaration of birthright.
Yeah, that's possible. My mother's side of the family, the Wells family, it's possible they go back that far.
Mm-hmm.
Got my wheels turning on that.
Yeah, I've traced mine, and I have made a declaration of birthright. I have filed it not only at the local county level here in Florida, but I also filed it with the State Department last year, including that with my affidavit of political status.
Anita,
I just want to let you know that I've unmuted your phone. Go ahead, Ron.
Oh, thanks.
So, anyways, so you've got that position, or it's you just follow the definition in Black's Law. It's one of three things. I don't know if we need to cover that real quick. I'll do it. I've got it right here. Right here. Where are you?
Yeah, one thing, I'm not poo-pooing the people that wrote that document.
Yeah.
They're astringent or, you know, very strict leading into it. That's on them. As for me, one of the examples they used was from a very long time ago, decades and decades, a gentleman who went into court and represented himself appropriately. And
you see, wait a minute, let me just stop you right there. A sovereign or a state citizen does not represent themselves. They present themselves.
However it was, I'm sorry.
No, that's fine.
Misrepresented that. However it worked out, he stood before a judge, and he just, man, I really wish I had that entire excerpt. The computer I have is kind of defunct because of the battery, and you know, finances are a little tight, but we're looking forward to things changing in the future, and I'm ready and set for the RV, and
I think you're going to be ready very soon.
Yeah, and so some of this stuff also I would love to change as well, because I'd like to move to a different state, where I can farm and you know, buy something that somebody left behind and do a lot of really good in the world and get my manufacturing and stuff up and running. But I don't want to be doing it with holes in my armor or having, you know, not having my blind side covered. And so you guys sound like a really, I've been on every call as much as I could. I'm sad I missed Bernie's thing on Saturday night.
Are you a member of Bernie's group on Telegram?
I have one of Bernie's instruments. So Bernie and I have been working together along with people he works with. So,
because every one of Bernie's calls are recorded and they're posted. I post them on the Telegram room that he has.
Yeah, I can't seem to get any of those running, but that's kind of a moot point here. I'm just glad that, you know, there's help, there's the proper terminology, presenting, you know, that one word right there, you know, but I need to be in the right circle.
There you go.
Taking care of my dog.
Well, welcome here. You'll be welcome to Florida. We've got some good dirt up in the Panhandle and down the west side of our state. as far as north as Gainesville and Ocala. Got some really good dirt.
Yeah,
gets a little thin and loose further south.
Yeah.
All right. Anita, you had raised your hand?
Yeah, I... Well, I was about 5 minutes late into the call, so I must say whatever I'm saying probably has already been dealt with, but when I searched and searched about whether I had to pay taxes, I mean, just through the internet, they say if you are, you know, residing, whatever that means, or living...
All right, stop right there. Residence
mm-hmm.
or any derivative thereof, residing, whatever.
Uh-huh.
That is someone who is domiciled in Washington, D.C.,
oh, okay.
yet living in one of the several states. So anytime the law, government, whoever, in the courtroom, in a town council meeting, when you're referred to as a resident, object. Say, excuse me, I'm not domiciled in Washington, D.C. I'm domiciled here in New York or wherever you are, one of the union
mm-hmm.
states. And I would never name the state without saying one of the union states. Always.
Uh-huh.
All right, continue.
Okay. Well, so they're basically saying if you earn any income, and, you know, whatever words they use, you were hanging out here and you got some money, you had to file taxes, no matter what you called yourself.
Right.
But
right.
I'm going with what you're saying, and I'm going to put that in my brain and reread those things.
Right. Well... where does it say? All persons liable. I'm looking for that phrase. Well, for instance, the 14th Amendment. All persons born or naturalized in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
The United States is very limited. The United States of America is very large. So, you know, right there by definition, it's got that. What was the other phrase? All persons made liable. Let's see what that pulls up. No, nothing. It's not part of something. All right. Anyways, that's still part of something in one of the statutes. It says right there, if you are someone who's liable, which recognizes that there are those people who are not liable just by the very statement.
Right.
And so if somebody's using that code, here's a basic rule of law. Whoever makes an assertion, if that assertion is challenged, they must evidence proof of their assertion. And there's a whole group of definitions regarding what is evidence. You've got hearsay evidence. You've got authenticated evidence. You've got people giving testimony who have firsthand knowledge. Those people are called a competent fact witness. So when a blue light goes on your rearview mirror or a judge or a prosecutor says something that is objectionable, you object, and you say, you have asserted, sir, ma'am, blah, 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 blah. Where's your evidence for this assertion? And then if the thing comes out of their mouth next, well, everyone knows. No, everyone doesn't know, and you're required to evidence to prove your assertion. Otherwise, you can't say that.
That doesn't seem to work with land taxes, though.
Well, John, I had a conversation with John today, and for 30 minutes or so, he had to put me on hold twice. There was a attorney, not a DAG, but an attorney within the IRS, who was ordered to prosecute this 80-some-year-old woman. And you've not heard this before. John's not talked about this particular woman before. She's 86 or whatever. and through a series of letter writings and communications, that attorney is now retiring and going to live in a country that has no extradition to the United States, and is sending out a simple three-sentence letter to the woman, telling her that, in fact, all charges are dropped and she has no concern about them pursuing her ever again. This attorney had several conversations with John, and two of them were just tonight when he was notified of this. So next week is going to be a real interesting call with John, and I encourage everybody that's on the call tonight to be there, because he will be telling that story.
Well, still, even with the land tax, they just say they're going to foreclose on you, and they won't give you true proof. And you there.
Yeah, well, there's a lawsuit. You're collecting names, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. They're going to have a federal lawsuit filed against them in all likelihood for deprivation of rights under color of law. They cannot do anything without evidencing the land, whether it's United States land that is owned by the United States, so the United States can tax you property tax, or if it's state land, union state land, that you hold in Allodium. So, well, it's a work in progress. Just go ahead and pay under protest, like we talked about, until we have time to get a handle on that.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else, press star 2 on your keypad while you're thinking about raising your hand. And everyone that's raised their hand, I've left your mics open. I'm going to go check Freedom's Radio real quick, see what we have here. Oh, nobody there.
Could I say something?
Yeah, please.
So,
okay.
I usually check with Jennifer first to see if what I'm saying
your mommy?
Is correct.
Isn't that sweet?
No, she's my advisor. She's my...
Oh, okay.
Where was I? I've been working on this thing about, you know, going back and to the beginning of time and bringing my land forward and all that. So are you saying there's a class action lawsuit that would include my situation, or am I just...
I don't think so. I didn't say class action. It's going to be... Yeah, it's going to be one-on-one. In other words, that's why I asked her if she was collecting names, because if you've got John Doe that has, and I mean, you know, a real person that has been making these threats and so forth, they're going to be named in their individual capacity. Just no different than if a law enforcement officer turned on his blue lights and pulled you over. They're going to be named in their individual capacity in a federal lawsuit.
Okay, so people have made threats about you not paying taxes or not paying your property taxes. That's what you're talking about.
Yes.
Okay, because I didn't know what kind of names she was collecting.
Yeah, she's collecting names of those that have threatened her.
Uh-huh. Hmm. Okay. So I'll have to have a meeting with John. All right, thank you.
Sure. All right. Duane, I just, from Pennsylvania, I see where you just... logged in. John is not on the call tonight. He's very, very ill. He'll be back in the saddle prayerfully tomorrow, but he could not do the call tonight, just to let you know. We're just having an open mic here, talking about anything that anybody wants to talk about. Press star 2 on your keypad, ladies and gentlemen, to raise your hand. Press star 2, and I'll do the best I can to communicate with you and have some fun tonight. Otherwise, it'll be a shorter call. Press star 2, anyone. Otherwise, it's going to be good night.
Well,
I'll check.
If no one's asking anything, can you explain in more simple terms or something about the 50 thou for a mill with her slevin type thing? I mean, what exactly does that mean? You know,
what, say those words again.
Has 11 two people that were speaking about loaning or getting a bank loan. How
that Slevin. Works. Slevin. You said Slevin.
Slevin? Is it Slevin?
The Wednesday night call?
Yeah.
Okay. Now that I know who you're talking about, I thought I heard leaven, like, you know, Passover, having unleavened food.
Oh, I thought it was leaven.
Yeah, okay. Now I hear you now. So what about Mr. Slevin?
Well, his two new people, what they're offering, like, can you explain? Because I sort of had a call, and I don't understand what it is.
All right, so the first thing, if you recall, I asked directly, is what you're doing legal? And his reply was beautiful because it's pure law. Law is not moral, okay? Law is not and has never been moral. How is it moral to give a woman a right to choose, end quote? That's not moral. Half the people involved in that die. So law is not moral. And what he was saying is that this is a totally unregulated field. It has always been totally unregulated. And I'm just manipulating the field to do what I want to create the appearance of all of this value. And there's, at this point, nothing that they can do about it because there's no law against what we're doing, is what he said. So Mr. Slevin creates an his party, his people create an LLC that is initiated by someone who does not have a Social Security number. They've never had one given to them at birth. And through the unique laws of New Mexico, I think it is, where you don't have to do something there that you have to do in all the other states, but you don't have to in New Mexico, by a someone without a Social Security number, they have every bit as a right to create an LLC as anybody else. So this LLC comes into the picture and is assembled in such a way within the law that it doesn't create a taxable tax responsibility or a liability, whatever. So you've got that in play. And then these other two people, Tony the Tiger and the Anchor, I like to call him the Anchor Man because that's the name that he used as the guy that played that role in the Anchor Man, the movie. These two people have been in banking for X amount of years and learned the process of how credit is established, if you would. And utilizing the lack of oversight, the lack of laws regarding that you can't do this, you can't do that, it would be illegal if you did, enables them to take that LLC and for a price create this picture, if you would, that any bank looking at it would grant $1 million line of credit. For this amount, or if you want a $500,000 line of credit for less amount, they'll do a $500,000 line of credit, whatever it is. As an entrepreneur, having been in business of my own since I was 21, was it? No, 24. So in 24, I went into business for myself, never looked back. I can tell you, dealing with banks it doesn't make any sense, and especially today after you've learned that they create this out of thin air. You know, why not take somebody who's willing to hire people and put people to work and get things done and create commerce? You know, why not give them the tools they need to do it? But they don't. They like to control everything. So here, you're in control. You create this LLC that you can operate through anonymously and perfectly legally, and then you hire these other two people to create the background that enables you then, or for the LLC to go into a bank and borrow upwards to $1 million, depending on what program you get involved with. So that's what that's about.
And so even does that work even in today's precarious, bankrupt bank sort of situation? Because if I give out 50,000 and then I don't get a bank loan, a bank line of credit, I'll need the 50,000 back.
Yeah. Well, I've already done this for the account that I have is called Little Red Hen. That's the name I have for my LLC. It's called Little Red Hen, and I paid to have this, and I think this past week now, I have this line of credit, and I will be working with John to exercise this line of credit to loan so that we can go into court and say to the bank, we're here to pay off the loan. Here's a line of credit established for $600,000, if that's the amount of the mortgage. And we just require you to prove up your claim, which we talked about on these calls before, so I won't get into that depth of it. But the point is that that's created so that we can do this.
Right.
Jennifer, if I might interject, last Wednesday's call was Ron Burgundy. He referred to it as a 1-2-3 step, and then he had another thing that was 6 steps. And the first 3 had to do with your own personal credit and how they create a beautiful credit picture for the company, and then they make sure that they hammered out a lot of the details, if you remember the call, about making absolutely sure the maturity of the corporation.
Yep.
In the 1-2-3 step. So that's something to kind of keep it in your craw.
And what about the 4-5-6? Did what was that one again?
he was going into more detail. I'd like to hear him come back on and talk about more of the. It's a full 6 step of a different thing that he was doing, but you know, working in increments. And so the first one is to do what he was just saying in response to your comment. And then, if I remembered back correctly, he was talking basically about the 1-2-3, and that's your own personal credit, getting it up there and getting it sparkly and shiny as good as it can be, because the bank will look at that. And they're not really interested in all these other things that we spoke of Dun & Bradstreet and all these things. And I've had people try to throw all that stuff at me, and it sounded pretty good.
And how long do you think it takes from the first meeting till I can utilize the line of credit?
6 to 8 weeks, if I remember, 6 weeks to 8 weeks.
Uh-huh. And do you have to pay a monthly payment on the line of credit, or is that...
The line of credit lasts for about a year, and the way that it's set up, so whatever you build up within that year, if you maintain it, then you can continue and snowball with it. For instance, you have this idea, you can't get a loan for the bank from it, but you know that if you were to fund this idea, you're going to make lots of money. So you can utilize this vehicle to fund your idea, get your idea involved and moving. And if you're starting to, turn the money, that's what the banks are looking at, turning the money. What starts off with your credit score to begin with, it's only going to maintain that or improve. You know, with levels at $1 million or whatever, you know, level that you come in at. So, excuse me. That's what those.
The lines of credit have a monthly minimum repayment, or whether you don't have to have a monthly minimum repayment from the first time you take any money out.
Well, that's,
you know?
Again, that's the same. That's up to your negotiations with the bank. Let's just say that you are that you're creditworthy for a $1 million loan. So you go to the bank and you say, well, I'll pay interest quarterly, or I'll pay interest every month, or I'll pay principal and interest every month. However you do it, that's what you do.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. And is there anyone who can advise on where to buy properties, where the land could be, has a possibility of being allodium or whatever?
Bernie was talking about that on one of his calls, and we need to bring him up on that for that question, because that's exactly what Bernie wants to do once he gets here in the States. He said he was going to search in such and such parameters to find where there is property that at this moment is held in allodium, and he'll attempt to purchase it from the people already that hold it in allodium. So that's where he's going with that. John is taking the other avenue, which is to take what their land is there and to by virtue of evidence or not having the evidence, strip the United States of their claim to have the right to charge property tax, et cetera, to get that off of the tax rolls.
Because I've heard John talk about certain pieces of land can't be taken off and can't be allodium. And so I would want to know if anyone has areas where you can, where you know it could be allodium if we did the John process.
Right. That's a question for John for that part, and for Bernie for the other part.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome. Anyone else? Press *2 on your keypad. Otherwise, we're going to say goodnight. I'll check Freedom's Radio while you're thinking about doing that. I'll be right back in a second. Da-da-da-da-da-da. Poo. Nope, nothing there. And no one else has raised their hand. I want to thank you all for bearing with me tonight. Again, I apologize for John not having his appearance. Again, it was strictly due to health. Those things happen occasionally. I enjoyed the conversations that we had tonight and look forward to seeing you all tomorrow night. A really important call with Mr. Slevin. This LLC is something that anyone who either works as an employee or anyone who is an entrepreneur, this is definitely the vehicle to work through and operate through. And, of course, if you're an entrepreneur,
excuse me,
if you're an entrepreneur, then you want to definitely think about having a conversation with the two gentlemen that were special guests last week. They will not be here this week. We're talking about once a month having them here, or once every other week having them here possibly on Mr. Slevin's call. So thank you again for joining us. Till tomorrow night, good night, everyone, and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted. Thank you.
Thank you.